is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, head to nature.com/nature/podcast.
First up this year, we have a story all about...
Go on.
Well, I don't think I can remember.
I mean, I've got nothing.
No, I seem to have forgotten. So I know it's being presented by Sharmini Bundell. So hopefully she can shed some light on it.
So there's a feature out in Nature this week about memory. It asks, what does a single memory look like? Where is it stored in the brain? Which cells are involved? And what determines its particular shape? I got in touch with a neuroscientist who's working to answer these questions, Sheena Jocelyn. I first asked her how scientists define a memory.
Everybody has their sort of colloquial definition, and I think we can probably all agree that it's some sort of representation in the brain of a past event or some sort of past learning that we can recall at a later point.
And when people first were sort of studying memory, they were like, right, where is the memory section of the brain? That must be where the memories are stored. But we've since come to understand that memories are sort of more distributed across different brain areas.
We're certainly not saying that there's like one specific cell that stores a memory, the grandmother cell. You know, you stimulate this cell and there's the image of your grandmother. We now, as a field, I think, appreciate that memories are widely distributed in groups or ensembles of neurons that come together, and for whatever reason, these cells seem to be chosen and not other cells, and they form a memory.
And if there's no, you know, one cell, we can't identify the cell for a memory, how would we go about finding out which, I guess, multiple cells or multiple areas are involved in any given memory?
We're still at the sort of inference game. We infer that a cell or a brain region is important in a memory if we get someone to recall this memory and we see this brain area very active. So if you're looking at human memory, you put someone in an fMRI scanner and you ask them to recall a memory, and those places that are more active, they have, you know, stronger blood flow, those are thought to be the ones that are really important in sort of retrieving this memory and probably really important in housing this memory. We do the same kind of experiments in experimental animals in the lab.
So you have this vague idea that there is an association there with this memory and these particular cells, but how can you actually sort of test whether you're right about that?
So we can ask, what happens if we manipulate the activities of these cells when we ask mice to recall a memory? And what happens if we decrease their activity? Can they still recall the memory? So we go in and we can kill just these cells we think are really important in the memory, and we ask the mouse to recall a memory. The mouse shows us no evidence of recall. It's as if the memory has been erased.
How do you know if a mouse is remembering something or not?
Yeah, that's a question that we spend a lot of time in the lab discussing. And the only thing that we can do is we look at their behavior. So when a mouse is afraid, it shows this fear response, so it adopts this crouched, motionless posture. So what we do in the lab is we pair an innocuous stimulus, such as a tone or a place, with a tiny electric foot shock. Now, it's not enough to cause the animals any sort of damage, but it's enough for the mouse to say, what the huh? And the cool thing is that we can test memory by saying, well, the next time you hear this tone that we previously paired with the shock, do you show fear responses?
And then the next step is to see if you can stop them remembering the association.
Absolutely. So what happens if we perturb the function of this small population of cells? Do mice show us this freezing response? Do they remember? And it turns out that no, they don't. So it's like we're sort of turning off the memory. And the cool thing is, it has to be these cells we perturb the function of. If we perturb the function of a bunch of other cells, we don't see this. So it's really specific.
So getting rid of the memory is one way to prove that you've kind of got the right cells, you've found the cells for that memory. But then there's also experiments on activating recall of an existing memory.
I mean, you can always argue that there's multiple ways of decreasing a memory. But to actually bring a memory sort of out of the air, to have the animal bring to mind a memory without giving it an external retrieval cue, so in this case, the tone, what we can do is just give it an internal retrieval cue. We artificially activate these cells. It's like we're bringing to mind this memory because the mouse freezes. So it's like we're cutting out the middleman, going directly to those areas of the brain we think are important in the memory. We cause the mouse to remember this memory, and they show us this by freezing. It's amazing that this experiment worked and that it's been replicated so many different times.
And it's just really cool that you're able to manipulate memories like that. But is manipulating memories, either sort of activating it or getting rid of it, is that actually the point of the research?
I don't think that anyone is in this business to sort of cosmetically change memories. What we really want to do is understand how memories are formed in the brain for two reasons. One, it's a really cool question. Our brains are sort of like the final frontier of science. It really tells us who we are and how we process information, how we encode information, is getting at understanding the brain at a very fundamental level. But it's also really important because there's an epidemic of memory disorders in the world, everything from Alzheimer's to autism, which you can sort of phrase as being an information processing disorder. But the treatments are really lacking because we don't understand how memories are normally made.
So your work is mainly on mice, but the research that's going on in humans is actually kind of backing up a lot of what you found.
The fundamental things about how memories are encoded is really similar between mice and humans in the lab. And to me, if we get really converging evidence from two very different species doing very different tasks, yet the same answers still keep coming up, that is really exciting to me. It tells me that we're really on to something here.
That was Sheena Jocelyn from the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, talking to Sharmini Bundell. A lot of the work that Sheena mentioned, both from her lab and others, is described in a feature over at nature.com/news, so go over there to give it a read, if you remember.